Help with me to Isaiah 5, please. Isaiah chapter 5. So good to be with you this morning. This morning what I'd like to do is continue our refreshment of the year, but this morning I'm going to work us through a text that we have never looked at together. So y'all can probably already tell from the picture and the title that we're going to talk about fruitfulness this morning. What a shock, right? Can't talk about 2019 without talking about the fruit tree. What I'd like to do this morning is try to approach fruitfulness from a very different angle and hopefully bring to mind some things we've studied. I'm really not going to recover or refresh old sermons I've preached in this vein, but I really hope the text that we study from Isaiah 5 really demonstrates some of the power of fruitfulness in the Bible. The question I'd like to pose this morning is, how does the vineyard of the Lord teach us to live? How does the vineyard of the Lord teach us to live? I wrote a first draft for this sermon actually after our Blitz study earlier this year on the book of Isaiah, but time never allowed me for other reasons to preach through this text. And I'd like for us to look at Isaiah chapter 5. Isaiah chapter 5. Let me give an intro to this text. The book of Isaiah is interesting in that it has a really long introduction. The first five chapters of Isaiah are all introduction. You can get almost all of the major themes of Isaiah in those first five chapters. The book as a whole has 66 chapters, so it's a long book of the Bible, but the first five are all introduction. Here in Isaiah chapter 5, the prophet Isaiah is going to introduce the imagery of a vineyard, and he's going to discuss how this vineyard shapes the life of Israel. Let's just read the text. Isaiah 5 verse 1. Isaiah 5 verse 1. Let me sing for my beloved my love song concerning his vineyard. My beloved had a vineyard on a very fertile hill. He dug it and cleared it of stones and planted it with choice vines. He built a watchtower in the midst of it and hewed out a wine vat in it. And he looked for it to yield grapes, but it yielded wild grapes. Notice what's happened here before we continue. Isaiah begins by talking about a vine dresser singing a love song for his vineyard. He loves that vineyard. He dug it himself. He planted it himself. He even built a watchtower and did everything for this vineyard. But what did this vineyard do? He looked for it to yield grapes, but it yielded wild grapes. The vineyard's not working like it's supposed to. Verse 3. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge between me and the vineyard. What more was there to do for my vineyard that I have not done in it? When I looked for it to yield grapes, why did it yield wild grapes? And now I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will remove its hedge, and it shall be devoured. I will break down its wall, and it will be trampled down. I will make it a waste, and it shall not be pruned or hoed, and briars and thorns shall grow up. I will also command the clouds that the rain may not come. Stop. What's he saying? The vine dresser is so disappointed in the vineyard that he's going to break down the wall, he's going to break down the watchtower, and then all of the chaos of the hill is going to come into the vineyard, and he's pretty much leaving the vineyard to die. Verse 7. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah are his pleasant planting. He looked for justice, but behold, bloodshed, for righteousness, and behold, an outcry. So work through this text with me. What is this idea of the metaphor of the vineyard? Well, quite clearly, Isaiah spells out God is the vine dresser and Israel is the vineyard. Here's the story. Here's the story. A vine dresser plants a vineyard. He loves it and cares for it and does everything he can for it to grow. But wild grapes bear forth. He's so disappointed in the vineyard that eventually he's going to break down the wall and the vineyard is going to be destroyed because there's nothing else he can do to save the vineyard and the vineyard will be destroyed. What is it talking about spiritually? God has planted his nation Israel in the land of Israel, has planted his nation in the land of Israel. Israel was supposed to do great things. They were supposed to be God's people. They were supposed to be righteous and holy and good. But Israel turned wicked and unrighteous and evil. So God is going to leave his people to the captives because there's nothing else he can do for it. It's a sad story, isn't it? This is a sad story. Because it's a tragedy of a God who loved his people and did everything he could for his people. But they rebelled, and so he's going to leave them for destruction. Well, I am going to offer words of hope at the end of this sermon. But let's deal with the tragedy of the text. This is not a text that is meant to make us feel good. It's a text to make us wake up and look at ourselves. So let's talk about the vine dresser to begin with. Now, as I said, God is the vine dresser. I want you to note this. God cares for the vineyard. Listen to how the vine dresser describes the vineyard, verse 1. Let me sing for my beloved, my love song concerning his vineyard. My beloved had a vineyard on a very fertile hill. He dug it and cleared it of stones. He planted it with choice vines. He built a watchtower in the midst of it and hewed out a wine vat in it. And he looked for it to yield grapes. But it yielded wild grapes. Notice, the vine dresser loves the vineyard. He loves the vineyard. He cares for the vineyard. And because he cares for the vineyard, God is going to have to judge the vineyard. Now, I want us to wrestle with this for a second. This is the idea that's a bit difficult to grasp in the text, but it's very important. Because God cares for the vineyard, he will have to judge the vineyard. Now, let me explain this. Go down to verse 4. What more was there to do for my vineyard than I have done in it? When I looked for it to yield wild grapes, and it yielded wild grapes. And now I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will remove its hedge, and it shall be devoured. I will raise and break its wall, and it shall be trampled down. I will make it a waste, and it shall be pruned or hulled. What does God do here? God understands he loves this vineyard. God cares for this vineyard, and he wants this vineyard to do good things, but it's not going to. So what's God going to have to do? God is going to have to judge the vineyard so that it can have any hope of producing fruit in the future. What happens whenever your field catches a virus? Julie could probably knows this far better than I do. But let's deal with trees, for example. What happens if you have a grove of trees and they start to wither because of a virus that spread? What has to happen? Do you just get rid of one little branch from one little tree and hope that it goes away? No. If you know that an infection is spreading through a vineyard, you have to get rid of the whole thing. And then whenever you get rid of the whole thing, then you can start anew and hope the ground will be replenished and then start the vineyard again. This is what he's explaining. My vineyard has become so bad that I have to judge it. I have to judge it. And remember in the book of Isaiah, why does God judge it? Why can he judge it? Because remember in Isaiah, God is exalted. That is the view of God as you go all throughout the book of Isaiah. God is exalted. And because God is exalted, even above the hill of the vineyard, God is going to have to judge the vineyard. God is going to have to judge the vineyard. So let's stop and just meditate on this for a moment. Does God care how we live? That's a common question, right? Does God really care how I live? A question I'm sure you've perhaps asked, if not you've heard asked from those of the world. Does God really care how I live? Well, I actually want to back up and re-ask this question. Does God care for the vineyard? Oh, yes. The reason God cares how we live is because God cares for us. The reason God cares for how we live and the reason it matters to Him is because He cares for us and He made us. We have to understand that we don't have a God who just haphazardly made this creation. We have a God who, out of His everlasting wisdom and out of His infinite love, made His creation. God cares how you live because He cares for you. Much as God is exalted, our exalted God has made a good creation that He cares for. So does God care how we live? Most certainly. But what is the vine dresser going to have to do? The vine dresser will judge if the vineyard does not yield good fruit. The vine dresser will judge if the vineyard does not yield its purpose. The vine dresser will judge if the fruit is not good, but if the fruit is bad. So let's talk about this vineyard. What's going on here with the vineyard? Notice the vineyard. The vineyard was meant to be good. It was planted on a high hill, verse 1. My beloved had a vineyard on a very fertile hill. He dug it and cleared it of stone. I think this is talking about Jerusalem in particular. That much as Jerusalem was built on a high hill, God has cleared away the nations and planted His people in the land. This exact verbiage is used in Exodus 15 to describe the nation of Israel. So here's how it happens to the vineyard. The vineyard was on a high hill. It had everything that it needed for success, yet it became wild. Look at verse 2. It yielded wild grapes. Verse 4, it yielded wild grapes. Verse 6, because of that it shall be made a waste. Because of that, verse 7, the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel. And the men of Judah are His pleasant plant, are His pleasing planting. And He looked for justice and behold bloodshed, for righteousness and behold an outcry. What happened to the vineyard? The vineyard was meant to be good and fruitful, yet the vineyard has produced bad fruit. And what He is going to describe throughout the book of Isaiah are these wild grapes. Let's wrestle with this for a bit. As you work through, really verse 8, through the rest of the chapter, what He's going to do is describe the wild grapes that have grown in Israel. God planted His nation to be good and righteous and holy, yet they have borne wild grapes. What are the wild grapes that Israel has borne? There's a big list of them. The first is covetousness. Verse 8. Woe to those who join house to house, who add field to field, until there is no more room, and you are made to dwell alone in the midst of the land. The Lord of hosts has sworn in my hearing, surely many houses shall be desolate, large and beautiful houses without inhabitant. For 10 acres of the vineyard shall yield but one bath, and a homer of seed shall yield but an ephah. What does He say? Verse 8, woe to those who join house to house, who add field to field until there is no more room and you are made to dwell alone in the midst of the land. What is He promising? He's promising the covetous shall be judged. We talked about this last week, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. Recently we talked about covetousness. God will judge the covetous. God will judge the covetous. He continues into verse 11. He's going to go into a detailed description of the partying in Israel. Look at verse 11. Woe to those who rise early in the morning, that they may run after strong drink, who tarry late into the evening as wine inflames them. They have lyre and harp, tambourine and flute and wine at their feast, but they do not regard the deeds of the Lord or the work of their hands. Therefore my people shall go into exile for their lack of knowledge. Their honored men go hungry. Their multitude is parched with thirst. Therefore Sheol has enlarged its appetite and opened its mouth beyond measure, and the nobility of Jerusalem and her multitude will go down, her revelers and he who exults in her. Man is humbled and each one is brought low, and the eyes of the arrogant are brought low. But the Lord of hosts is exalted in justice, and the Holy One shows Himself holy in righteousness. Then the lamb shall graze as in the pasture, and nomads eat among the ruins of the rich. What has He promised? Those who party shall be judged. And we won't take the time to work through all of these in detail, but I want you to note the wild grapes that Israel have borne. Covetous, partying, corruption, immorality, pride, and drunken justice. Read the last one with me, verse 22. Woe to those who are heroes at drinking wine and valiant men in mixing their strong drink, who acquit the guilty for a bribe and deprive the innocent of his right. These are the wild grapes that Israel has borne. So what's the problem here? God planted his nation to be good and holy. He cared for those grapes. Yet what have those grapes borne? Those grapes have become wild. They become wild. And you can't do a thing with them. You can't harvest them, can't eat them, can't press them. They're worthless. What has Israel done? God planted his nation Israel so that they could demonstrate his righteousness to the nations, Deuteronomy 7. So that they could be his wisdom to the world, Deuteronomy 6. So that they could show how wise the God of Israel really is. Yet what happened throughout the history of Israel? They fell into rebellion and wickedness and idolatry and sin. Covetousness, partying, corruption, immorality, pride, and drunken justice have far more been the characteristics of God's people than righteousness and goodness and holiness. So now's the time to do some introspection before we continue. What type of grape am I? What type of grape am I? Understand this. No matter whether you are a wild grape or a good grape, God cares for you and he planted you. I mean, understand, this is the image here. Our God is so loving, he got down on his knees and he worked the soil and he worked it and moved the stones out of the arduous labor that it required. And he built the watchtowers. He did everything that was necessary. God was the loving God who stooped down and cared for his vineyard. And what did that vineyard do? It became wild and gave into sin. Brethren, far too often that's the characteristics of our life. That God creates us and cares for us and loves us and makes us good, yet we then give in to selfishness and sin, and these are the things that can't characterize our life rather than goodness and righteousness and holiness. We become wild grapes. Oh, what then? Fortunately, that isn't the end of the story. Yes, Isaiah is going to give the problem, but he's also going to give the solution. Notice how God is going to solve this. He's going to offer the grapes of wrath. Steinbeck did not make that. He got it from Isaiah, which actually comes from Revelation as well. John in Revelation got it from Isaiah. But he's going to tread out the grapes of wrath. Let's talk about this. Verse 24. Therefore, as the tongue of fire devours the stubble, and as dry grass sinks down into the flame, so their root will be as rottenness, and their blossom go up like dust, for they have rejected the Torah of the Lord of hosts, and have despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. Therefore, the anger of the Lord was kindled against his people, and he stretched out his hand against them and struck them, and the mountain quaked, and their corpses were as refuse in the midst of the streets, for all his anger has not turned away, and his hand is stretched out still. This is some of the most graphic parts of the whole Bible when God's judgment comes. But verse 26. He will raise a signal for the nations far away and whistle for them from the ends of the earth. And behold, quickly, speedily they come. None is weary. None stumbles. None slumbers or sleeps. Not a waistband is loose, not a sandal strap is broken. Their arrows are sharp, all their bows bent. Their horses' hoofs seem like flint, and their wheels like the whirlwind. Their roaring is like a lion, like the young lions they roar. They growl and seize their prey. They carry it off. None can rescue. They growl over it on that day, and like the growling of the sea. And if one looks at the land, behold, darkness and distress, and the light is darkened by the clouds. That is Isaiah's poetic way of saying, nations will come into you and destroy you. judgment will come. Judgment will come. And then you go into Isaiah 6. And that's it. I'm not done with the sermon, so don't get your songbooks out. But could you imagine if Isaiah 5 was the last of this that we read? Now, before I offer a few words of hope, let us really wrestle with these words of judgment that Isaiah brings. Isaiah, you remember the context, Chronicles class. When does Isaiah speak? During the reign of Jotham and Ahaz and Uzziah and Ahaziah. During a generally dark history of Israel's history. Now Hezekiah will finally bring hope toward the end of Isaiah's preaching. But in general, this is a dark day for Israel. Over 100 years before their captivity, Isaiah is warning them, you have become wild grapes. God will judge you. But brethren, understand this. The judgment of God is given not because he is an angry, vengeful God who is just waiting to smite us. I'm afraid at times that we view God as a vindictive, cruel father who just tortures people out of just desire. That's not our God. Our God is a God who got down on his knees and dug the dirt. Our God is the God who moved the stones. Our God is the God who built the watchtower. Our God is the God who cares for his good creation. We have a loving, a good, a caring God. But because God is loving, because God is caring, what must God do when the vineyard becomes bad? He has to care for the vineyard. And he has to press out the grapes of wrath. Well, Isaiah does give words of hope. And he does promise that God will do something with his heel. But it's not in Isaiah 5. It's going to be later as you work through Isaiah 27. Turn with me to Isaiah 27. Isaiah 27. This is one of those parts of Isaiah that 1 through 5 is the introduction. Everything else will come back to 1 through 5 in some way. But notice the hope that God is going to give. Isaiah 27, let's begin in verse 1 for context. In that day the Lord with his hard and great and strong sword will punish Leviathan, the sleeping serpent, Leviathan, the twisting serpent, and he will slay the dragon that is in the sea. So there's coming a time when God will judge. But in that day, a pleasant vineyard, sing of it. I, the Lord, am its keeper. Every moment I water it, lest anyone punish it. I have night and day. I have no wrath. Would that I had thorns and briars to battle. I would march against them and I would burn them all together. Or let them lay hold my protection and let them make peace with me. Let them make peace with me. In those days, Jacob shall take root. Israel shall blossom and pour forth shoots and fill the whole world with fruit. What is God going to do with this vineyard? Notice what God's going to do to the hill. God is going to bring oppressors and captives against the hill, and God will judge the hill. But once the hill has been burned and destroyed, God is going to bring up a new nation from the ashes. Because, verse 4, I have no wrath. Would that I had thorns and briars to battle. The wrath of God's been poured. I would march against them and I would burn them together or lay hold with my protection, let them make peace with me and let them make peace with me. In days to come, Jacob shall take root, Israel shall blossom and put forth shoots and fill the whole world. In the words of Isaiah, and this is how he said it, it's going to be hope through judgment. Hope through judgment. And isn't this a wonderful text? that God is not leaving the hill for the beast to devour, nor is God leaving the hill for mere destruction, but God is God. God is going to do something good with that hill because he loves the hill. And a pleasant vineyard, a fruitful vineyard, a good vineyard will come. So before we talk about the lessons, let's just get the story in our head. Here's what Isaiah has told. A caring vine dresser planted the vineyard out of his love and concern and his care. The vineyard became wild, so he judged it. But in its place, God is going to plant a good vineyard that will be fruitful. What are the lessons from the vineyard? Many, but I'd like to offer just a couple. Number one, God is a caring vine dresser. God is a caring vine dresser. Again, do you know how interesting it is that even the passages of judgment in the prophets are within the context of God's care and loving kindness for his people? Why did God have to judge Israel? Because he is a God who loves and cares so deeply that he wants what's best for that hill. Why will God in the future judge? Because he is a loving, caring God who cares for his creation. Apathy is no description of our God. Our God is caring and concerned and convicted and loving. And because of that, God has to do what's best for the vineyard, and God has to do what's best for the hill. That's the nature of God. And oh yes, if action and context demands it, God will judge. But number two, here's the question. Am I a good grape or a wild grape? Am I a good grape or a wild grape? God planted each of us in his vineyard, in his kingdom. John 15, I am the vine, ye are the branches. John 15 comes right from Isaiah 5. Why did Jesus describe us as the branches in the vineyard? Jesus is the vine. Abide in me and I in you, bear fruit. It's a great text. It's a great text. I'd love to read through it this morning. Time doesn't allow. But what is Jesus saying? If you are in the branch, if you are on the tree, bear fruit. Bear good fruit. Don't be a wild grape. But brethren, what happens? If our lives are characterized by covetousness and partying and idolatry and sin, the goodness and care that our God poured into us has been for nothing. But whenever we pour over righteousness and goodness and holiness, the fruit of the Spirit, what is it? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. When we bear those fruit of the Spirit, what have we done? We're a good grape. We bear good things for our good God, and we fill his creation with the fruit of righteousness, Isaiah 32. Brethren, that is why God cares how we live. So let me re-ask the question. Does God really care how we live? I mean, is my language and my behavior and my free time, does God really care? Aren't there more important things going on in the world that God cares about? Yes, but re-ask the question. God cares how you live because he first cares for you. Your vine dresser crafted you from nothing. From the dust of the ground, he made man. And the dust which came from nothing. We have a caring, loving vine dresser who wants what's best for his creation. And truly, God is good. You can begin your songbooks out at this time. So I have to ask the question one more time before the year's up. Are you a Christmas tree or a fruit tree? I received in the mail about 2 weeks ago one of the most thoughtful presents I've ever received in my life. Rebecca's vest that she got me 2 years ago is right up there with it, but that's a whole different story. And thanks to Lisa for knitting the twins' vest as well. Y'all really care about me. But about 2 weeks ago in the mail, one of the girls from camp sent me an ornament. And on the inside, I have a picture on my phone I can show you. On the inside, there's an apple tree. And the ball on the outside says, "Be a fruit tree." And she sent it to me and said, "As you put up your Christmas tree, remember, don't be a Christmas tree, be a fruit tree." As we decorated the tree this year, we put that tree up. It was Emily, by the way, Hannah. I can tell you're wanting to know who it was. It was Emily. As we put that ornament up this year, I thought, I am doing the very thing I have told this congregation not to do. I'm decorating a Christmas tree. Y'all know the point. If all you do is just put things on from the outside in, it's not going to work. You really have to be changed in your heart. You have to be changed on the inside. Because our good, loving God cares about the heart. That was the sermon last week. Covetousness was 2 weeks ago. There you go. God cares about the heart because He made it from nothing. The irony of that ornament, Emily said, was as she was making it, the leaves kept falling off of it. Psalm 1, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree that is planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither." And I have to say, I had the best time putting that ornament up on the tree this year. We let Brooklyn do all of the non-breakable ones on the bottom foot. But that was one that went up high. Because it was a reminder that this ornament had leaves that are withering. But I don't need to be a Christmas tree. It's beautiful. Adam, even at this age, my Adam. I mean, he spent an hour the other night just looking at the lights. I mean, there's just something about him that from birth we just love the light. But we're not supposed to be Christmas trees that appear beautiful, but then you take them down at the end of the year. We need to be a fruit tree that is firmly rooted in the Lord. Because God cares for you. And He wants you to be a part of that vineyard. Understand what our God can do. Our God can take a vineyard that was wasting away and diseased, and He can kill the bad things of that vineyard. And He can make that vineyard rise again to be good. What God did in Isaiah 5 to the destruction of the vineyard is what God does to us in baptism. What God does to the goodness of the vineyard, Isaiah 27, is exactly what He does to us in baptism. The putting off of the bad to the raising of the new. So that we can live a life of fruitfulness for Him. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation this morning, I ask you to come forward as we stand and sing.